Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Zeke. I'm here with Bettina, and we are talking about dance in Montreal. This is Movement Museum. It's about 2:08. You can listen to us, or you are listening to us live. You're listening to us on CKUT 90.3 FM, on cable 91.7, or on the internet, or on your mobile device at movementmuseum.com. We have a special in-studio guest, and she's got me all nervous and sort of my hands are shaking, so at which point I'm going to read a poem. This one's called The Ballet, and it's by Thomas Hardy. They crush together a rustling heap of flesh, of more than flesh, a heap of souls, and then they part and mesh and crush together again, like the pink petals of a too sanguine rose, frightened, shut just when it blows. Though all alike in their tinsel livery and indistinguishable at a sweeping glance, they muster, maybe, as lives wide in irreverence. A world of her own has each one underneath, detached as a sword from its sheath. Daughters, wives, mistresses, honest or false, sold, bought, hearts of all sizes, gay, fond, gushing, or penned, various in thought. Of lover, rival, friend, links in one pulsed chain, all showing one smile, yet severed so many a mile.
Nice.
Ah, you like that one?
Yeah, I like that
okay.
one.
Okay. And yes, we have Paula de Vasconcelos, and I apologize that I am butchering your name.
No, that was very good.
and you are the artistic director of Pigeons International, doing Grâce à Dieu ton corps, which is at the Cinquième Salle. And yes, thank you very much for coming in. Thank you very much for making Grâce à Dieu ton corps. That's the one thing that I'm always fascinated with, and that I end up, I'm now realizing I'm repeating myself with questions when we have people come in, but how did you go about making it? What is the process?
The process is a part of a long process, which is by now is 25 years long. I cannot say which day I decided to do one specific show each. They all kind of start to come alive a long time in advance as little ideas or fragments in my mind. And we are at Pigeons officially a theater company, and we started off by doing theater that was very physical, with actors that were very talented with movement, etc. And so slowly we started integrating dancers, and sometimes some of our shows now are done only with dancers. And why am I saying this? I guess it's because the process for me is always in flux, and scoops up things that fall into my life. And I scoop these things up most of the time, probably unaware that I'm scooping them up. And eventually the need to bring some of that material out presents itself. Now, and yes, the reason I'm talking about theater and then dance is that my whole life, our whole life with Pigeons has been dedicated in a way to the body, to the human body. And I thought it would be interesting to come back to, you know, the fundamental element in all of our shows, which was the body. And so to just focus on that. And I was also very much in the mood to create a piece that would be more intimate, because I often create pieces that are with quite a few dancers, large-scale scenographies, and I felt like working in greater intimacy with some of the performers, and I felt it was also the right timing with the dancers in the show, because I'd been working with two of them for about 6 years now, and it just felt like all different elements were falling into place at the right time. And I think that's how you create a show, is when you feel that something absolutely needs to come out, then you just follow that instinct and you do it.
Is there, I don't know, some sort of description of what you think had to come out for Grâce à Dieu?
I'll probably be able to answer that question in a few years, because it's only in retrospect that I understand fully my own work. Right now, this show is on right now, so I don't have that depth of field right now. But I definitely wanted to celebrate the human body. I definitely wanted to show my immense fascination, gratitude for the existence of the human body. I wanted to show I wanted to work with nudity as well, to show it in its nobility, to show the body as not only a sexual body. Of course, the body is sexual, but not all of the time. It is not only sexual. So I wanted nudity that was simple and noble and natural, I would say. And and I wanted to also focus on relationships, but that was not at all the main drive of the work.
The body.
It was the body. Mm-hmm. The body, and hopefully the body as containing something larger than life. The body as just a vessel, a frame, a vessel for something greater.
How long have the dancers known each other? You said you've worked with two of them for 6 years. But considering the intimacy of the piece and the intimacy required between the dancers, how did they deal with this?
It was a magical process, I would say, because David and Zoe, and had it not been for the two of them, I'm not sure I would have done this piece right now. I knew I could do it because they were involved from day one. They have between them a natural bond that I think they can't even explain. They bond just easily. The minute they're in a studio or dancing together, there's this bond and this, complete trust in the other. So, and, they're very young and healthy and not very young, but young, healthy, intelligent human beings. And so the process was very easy, happy, joyful. When I do have dancers in the nude, they're not in the nude every day in front of me. They only actually get nude a few days before we open in the theater when, you know, there's lighting and there's a framework and there's, and all of a sudden I don't even tell them, okay, guys, it's time to take your panties off. They just eventually come on stage and they're nude and they just feel that it was the moment.
Oh, so you don't, when you rehearse the piece, the dancers are not in the nude then?
No.
It's only just before rehearsal.
Exactly. Only before we open.
Oh.
However, if we know that they're almost nude, I might say wear shorts or something, because if most of your skin is bare, then it affects how you can work on the floor or whatever. So, of course, if I know they're going to be nude, I tell them to take the snowsuit off and, have bare arms, bare legs, so that they adjust to the fact that their skin will be touching the floor. But it was cool because they decided when it was time to take their clothes off, really.
Mm-hmm. And I also noticed that the way the dancers moved when they were in the nude was much more picturesque. They weren't really dancing like they were dancing when they were clothes. Mm-hmm. They were moving, mm-hmm. and they were posing, mm-hmm. and they were arranged on a plinth and, you know, behind a picture frame that made it look like nearly a two-dimensional quality, nearly like a nude painting, mm-hmm. or a life painting.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt that real deliberate shift. And was that part of you dealing with this fact that they were in the nude, dancing in the nude, and
yes.
trying to be respectful to that?
Well, it's just that because I didn't want the people... I knew that if I had a body, naked body, moving and shaking, the first 5 minutes people will just concentrate on the boobs and the penis, right? Because it upstages anything else.
Yes.
What can you do? There's nothing you can do about it. So I didn't want the scene to be about that, about the girl's lovely breasts or whatever. So I had to make sure that the audience would see all of the body,
mm-hmm.
not just what's wiggling around. And so I of course, I had to limit the movement. However, there is one tableau where they are very completely naked, and it's a very passionate love scene. We call it the wolves, but they're further away. They're in like a cave space backstage, not a cave, but in a space that's further away from the front of stage. And it's a love making scene, and they're completely naked, but and they do move, and it's very, you know, quite ferocious. But then again, they're further away, so I think we again focus on the entire body and not just the sexual parts of the body. So that's why I chose to not make them jump and turn around and do things that would...
I thought that was a really elegant solution, actually.
Well, it felt appropriate. And obviously I did, you know, there are frames in the show, and I did want to work with the idea of composition in the way a painter works on composition. I found, you know, during my studies, one of the most helpful courses I ever took in my whole life, I realize now, was a year-long course at Concordia about 19th century painting. And it taught me so much about perspective and, you know, geometry and color and light. And I really felt like approaching some of the new tableaus from a painter's perspective. At the same time, giving those tableaus, a lot of them are free in the sense that, for example, the tableau with the four nudes in the frame, every night they invent that scene. They choose the positions they want every night.
Oh, really? Because it was very careful how they place their hands. They're very respectful to each other while still transmitting an intimate atmosphere.
Yes, they're allowed every night. They create new images. Mm. So it's in a very kind of confined physical world. They have this four, you know, I used to call it like the scene where you put seven people in a Volkswagen. You have four four naked bodies in a small frame, and each day they have to figure out how they will all fit in and be very conscious of the visual composition they are creating. And I love the fact that it's free, improvised every night, because they have to reinvent it every day. And so it's almost interesting to combine opposite elements, something very confined and contained with set rules, and then within that, freedom.
Yes, because they don't have much space. They're on this plinth. They're behind a frame. That's a lot of people.
Yeah, yes. And they do it every night, and every night I go, oh, wow, wow, that's what they did. Oh, wow, they never did that before. And so I myself really enjoy looking at that every night. Mm.
And what about the puppets?
Oh, the puppets. What an adventure. You know, it's really hard to make puppets work. You have no idea how hard it is, because, you know, the people manipulating the puppets in our show are dancers. They're trained. They understand the body. But the thing is, it's not how you move your body. It's how you make the puppet move his or her body. Everything that goes through your body is then transferred into this little wooden creature that's about a foot and a half long. And that little creature doesn't move like you move. And that creature has things that don't work. It's made of wood. It's rigid, but then it can fly through the air. It can tumble. It can fall. It can do things that you can't do. And it takes such incredible concentration to make the puppets look like they're looking at someone or breathing. How do you make a wooden puppet breathe? How do you believe this little creature? And it was a lot of work. And thank God we had a wonderful puppet master, Marcel Houdon, who's really a puppet master. And she was unforgiving and would come with us and say, no, I don't believe you. I don't believe you when you turn your head this way. I don't believe that you're looking at the other girl. And she was very, very, very rigorous in a very positive way. And so, you know, it was very hard. But then it was magical, because I discovered as we were working on the puppets that what enchanted me and us together in our studio was that every time you have some kind of depiction of the human body, be it through puppets or sculpture or painting, you're actually looking at yourself. You're actually looking at your own humanity. You're actually observing yourself. and you're observing everything that's wrong with yourself. They're clunky, they don't move properly, they're inadequate, and yet they're magical because you can just pull a puppet out of a frame or make her fly or make her... And so the potential is immense, and it's proportionate to their flaws. And I'm realizing that using the puppets or using visual composition, painting, sculptures, it's just another way of looking at ourselves and trying to figure out what we're all about.
Why did you introduce puppets in the first place?
Well, I knew from the start that this show would be a long duet, and then I thought, okay, you know, my shows usually last about an hour and 15, an hour and 20, sometimes more. I can't have my two dancers dance 1 hour and 20 minutes straight. They will die. So I knew I needed some kind of an interlude, and that's where the idea of the puppets emerged. And then when I discovered that I needed puppets, I discovered it couldn't be the dancers dancing, manipulating the puppets, because you can't, when you're completely out of breath, then all of a sudden become the shadow behind this little puppet. So I needed, therefore, two more people. And one thing led to another, and finally there are five people on stage. But they were there to create, to have an interlude, to allow us to take a pause from the course of the two main dancers, you know. And I'm also very intrigued in general about everything, but I'm very interested by giving myself the possibility to write a show with everything, like not just movement, not just, you know, coming from theater. Obviously, most of our shows are very theatrical, but I like to feel that my palette, the palette into which I dip my brush, is very wide, and it can include actors, dancers, text, poetry, photography, sculpture, puppets, whatever feels necessary at that moment. I like to feel that I can just go anywhere I want to go.
That sounds like lots of fun.
It's scary too, though.
Yes, once you realize that everything is possible, suddenly, being narrow, saying this is the one thing I do, I talk behind a microphone, makes life a lot simpler. No, there, the way you were describing the puppets, it reminds me of the mask exercises that I did when I was a youngster, where it's you sort of discover different things about yourself just because you are you are removed from the acting.
Absolutely. Mask work is fascinating when you study theater, or I don't know if you study that in dance as well, but you know, when the minute you neutralize your face, then the whole body becomes the face, right? And you have to learn how to, you learn how to read your body, right?
And all sorts of other things just sort of squirt out. You say, that's not supposed to happen, or yeah. I didn't want that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yes. Absolutely.
No, so you would consider yourself more at Pigeons International, still more a theater company, a multimedia type, a multidisciplinary, pluridisciplinary?
Yeah, the titles like float in the air, and I have a hard time latching on to any of them, but we these days call ourselves theater dance. Different from dance theater, because at the base there's always a theme that we want to explore, and into which we integrate the choreography and the movement. Different from dance theater, I think, where you have most of the time a very strong physical vocabulary established into which you integrate pockets of theatricality sometimes. So our process is different in the sense that, different from that anyway, different, I always start by wanting to explore a theme, and the movement is created for that theme. So the movement doesn't come first, the theme comes first. And I think the day that the movement comes first, maybe I will consider it dance theater. But in my mind, the theme is the motor for me. It's what makes me put one foot in front of the other.
Okay, it's there. It's because it's upon sitting down at Casa Dia, I very deliberately try and go in as a blank slate to see all theater, dance, and stuff like that, because I realize low expectations get exceeded. High expectations always sometimes get exceeded, but not often. And at first, upon seeing it, thought was, is this going to be a puppet show?
Well, yeah.
And then realize, no, it's not a puppet show. And yeah, it's the sort of thing where, yeah, trying to, that pigeonholing, well, Pigeons International.
Yeah. People are very interested. I know that the grant offices are very interested in catalogs and where do you fit, and it seems to me, especially nowadays, that art is not at all about that.
Exactly.
So how do you create your choreography? What is your background? Is it more in theater or is it more in dance?
You know, I studied dance my whole youth, but I never became a dancer, so I studied very long as a young girl ballet. And then let go of ballet completely, and then started studying theater, and in theater renewed with dance, but much more contemporary. So I studied just about every type of dance. You know, I studied for many years contact dance, and of course took for many years regularly contemporary dance classes at LADMI, what we call now LADMI, and, you know, studied salsa, studied Latino, studied just about everything, you know. But almost just for the pleasure of it, not because I wanted to be a dancer. Because in my mind, I was at first going to be an actress and then a director. And officially I have a bachelor's and master's in theater. So it's always been...
Because your piece, it didn't feel like a theater piece. It felt like a dance piece that had a theatrical flair to it. Mm-hmm. So I'm surprised that you have this strong theater background. Mm-hmm. Because it felt like a dance piece.
Well, I'm not surprised. It's funny, I feel that the world of dance is much more receptive to everything that is unconventional, and the theater world is still very, very tied to traditional forms of theater. And the minute people step out of that, it rings an alarm bell, like, oh my God, is this still theater? And everything is theater. I think theater includes everything. Opera is theater. Dance is theater. You know, theater is the vastest frame, I find. Mm. And it can include everything. It can include music. It can include everything. But I find that theater, a lot of theater has been like pigeonholed into characters, storyline, hopefully some awful, dramatic something in the core of it all. And I've gotten really bored with that model. I feel it's only one model among many possible models. And what interests me in all art, I keep saying this in my grants, is its elasticity. You know, it's not how rigid the form is, it's how elastic is it? Mm. How, you know, how far can it go? What's the limit? And isn't it important that some artists test those frontiers, you know? That some artists sit on that line. You know, I think the minute no more artists are sitting on those fragile frontiers, then we're in trouble. We have to stretch the limits of our world, and art is the best place to do it, I think.
Yes, I agree entirely.
Yep,
Bettina does.
Nods
well.
All around.
About 2:32. We need to take a slight break, and we will be back on the other side talking again with Paula de Vasconcelos.
Museum, opinions, and primary voices. In a world increasingly reduced to a who markets louder philosophy that is, by definition, going to steamroll contemporary dance right out of existence, Movement Museum is an hour-long talk show where all you will hear is honest and compelling opinions. Opinions on why dance matters, Opinions on why dance. Opinions on what dance matters. Opinions on what dance. We talk to dancers, choreographers, teachers, composers, academics, audience members, producers, presenters, and anyone else with an opinion on dance. What moves them? What do they like? And most importantly, why? Live Thursdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, and archive for all of eternity Friday mornings at movement-museum.blogspot.com.
And we have returned. It's in the background there, going plinks and plonks. And there they are. It's the Airplane Trio doing something called Naranja Ha. And we will fade them off in the background. My name is Zeke. I'm here with Bettina. It's about 2:35, and this is Movement Museum, where we talk about dance, if you hadn't quite figured that out. You can catch us on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on your cable dial, or movementmuseum.com on your computer, on your mobile device, or any other sort of gadget like that. And we have This Week in Dance History now.
Yes, we do. And today we've got a Montrealer. Montrealer Jean-Pierre Perrault was born on February 16th, 1947, and died on December 4th, 2002. He was a dancer, choreographer, scenographer, artistic director, and teacher. He had wanted to be a visual artist, but changed his mind at the age of 19 when he began dance training with Jean Renault and Peter Bonham at Le Groupe de la Place Royale. He was co-director of Le Groupe and its school by 1971. There he created 23 decidedly experimental works. Frequently controversial, his interest in breaking barriers between the arts was immediately evident. In 1984, Perrault formed his own company, Fondation Jean-Pierre Perrault, and began to work on the massive scale that was characterized by all his works. He is best known for his work Joe from 1983, a seminal work for 32 dancers, which has been remounted several times. Dark to the point of being depressing, yet touchingly human, it championed the hopes and fears of faceless masses who clambered up a steeply rigged stage chasing elusive dreams. Perrault created the minimalist movement, sets, costumes, and music, rhythmic variations dancers made marching in heavy army boots. Most works he created since contain elements of Joe. Perrault's enormous productions are costly to tour, however, Joe has been seen in Europe, the US, and all over Canada. It is interesting to note that all of Perrault's choreographies began as drawings and paintings. These choreographic designs have been given a number of international solo exhibitions around the world, from Stockholm and Edinburgh to Antwerp and Quebec City. Happy birthday, Jean-Pierre Perrault.
Yes. Nice. In reading, hearing that, it's I like that whole sort of visual art connection to dance.
Yeah, same here.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we have an artistic director in the studio today, so it's kind of apropos.
Yes, and there it's Paola de Vascon. One more time. Paola de Vasconcelos.
Yeah, it almost turns out fine.
Uh-huh. It's still, I got to concentrate there. And we were talking about, first we should get some, that focus stuff out of the way. Grâce à Dieu ton cœur is at the Cinquième Salle. Mm-hmm. It's there tonight, tomorrow, and Friday. Saturday. Today is Thursday. And it's we highly recommend, or I highly recommend. I can't speak for you all, but I say y'all should go see it.
I wholeheartedly concur.
And we should probably mention that once at the top of the hour, once we're finished as well, so as to remind people, so as they go scurrying around to get pencils and papers and stuff if they haven't memorized everything. But running at that, we were sort of talking about your sort of theater dance company and stuff, and getting it, keeping it alive for 25 years. That's something phenomenal.
Yeah, if not completely crazy. Sometimes I think it's crazy. It's such a, creating art is it's such a joy, and it's such a wonderful way to live your life. But having a company is the nightmarish part of it, because the work, the bureaucratic paperwork that is needed to do to keep it alive is just never ending, and grows like it just grows and grows and grows and grows, and I spend more time in front of my computer than in my studio, and I keep telling myself every year, this is the year where those proportions will change, you know, but they never do. And it really weighs on me. It weighs on me that when I think that, wow, this might be the way we'll always be, and then I block that thought out of my mind and just carry on for another day. But yes, having a company, and especially in these days, these are really hard times for artists. It's a heavy load to, you know, every year say, okay, public funding, okay, private funding, okay, here we go, let's do it again. You know, that part is really hard.
How big is your company? How many dancers do you support?
Oh, it depends. You know, depends on the shows, of course. You know, this time we have 5 performers. I've already had 13, and we only work for certain number of months per year. I don't have a company where people there all year long. So usually we'll work for 4 to 6 months in a row. And there will be little pockets of touring here and there outside of that. But just that, and just so supporting that, but then supporting everything that goes with it. I mean, you know, the list is huge. All, you know, things like insurance, CCST, things that actually are just things that, you know, that you don't buy a table with or a pair of shoes with. It's just stuff that you need to organize and arrange to have this entity alive and safe. Yes. And functioning.
Now, there with your projects, is that the appropriate term to call Grâce à Dieu ton corps? Would be a project? And it doesn't matter. I'll call it a project because that's my question. My question is, you say that it's do it for 4 to 6, you view it as 4 to 6 months. Is the lifespan, though, of Grâce à Dieu, I would imagine, is much longer. Do you foresee, or what are, yes, the overriding, not the overriding, where's the horizon for Grâce à Dieu?
Oh, you never know. You know, this piece might tour and we might still be doing it 5 years from here. And then we might not. We might tour it a bit next year and that might be the end. We don't know. We never know in advance how long a piece will live. Fortunately, many of our pieces have lived a few years, you know. But it's not always necessarily the case. You never know. Never think about that, actually.
Okay.
Because I have no control over it, you know.
So where have you toured when you've gone international?
We've toured mostly Europe and South America and Canada and the US. We've never been to Asia.
Mm-hmm. That would be nice.
Maybe. I would like to go to Asia, but...
Because you're called Pigeons International, yes. So I would think that you are on tour a lot.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. You know, international was the reason we chose that when we chose this name, and we were very young and didn't really know what we were doing, but... international was to underscore the fact that we wanted it to be a multicultural company. You know, we started off as a theater company, and we wanted it to include artists from different cultural backgrounds. And right from the start, in most of our shows, there were always at least 2, 3, 4 different languages spoken, artists from different ethnical backgrounds. And eventually that even transposed itself into artists from different disciplines. And even in the world of dancers, I often work with dancers of completely different trainings. You know, I've had in one show, for example, Demain, had break dancers, ballet dancers, people from the circus world. You know, I think that international was meaning everything that comes from everywhere. You know, in theater, I'm still very worried about the fact that when I go to the theater here, I would never know that I live in a city that's full of immigrants and. People speak different languages. You'd think they're just either only white francophones or white anglophones, but there's nothing else out there. And I'm not at all an advocate of theater being the mirror of reality. It seems to me that we still, even though we don't have to at all imitate reality, we still have to be kind of listening to what the world beat is all about these days. You know, you have to kind of have an antenna that keeps you awake to what's going on in the world. And I feel that theater has become very hermetic, and it's there to serve its little community, and it doesn't seem to want to reach its hand out to what's out there. And so international was for that. It was not because we thought we would be international. Not at all. We were like 20. We didn't, my father actually wrote the our what do you call in English, la charte? You know, we needed to...
like a company philosophy?
Yeah, because we were 20 and we wanted to apply for a grant, and you couldn't apply for a grant if you weren't a company, so you had to incorporate. And I went to see my father and said, Dad, I need to incorporate. And he, don't worry, I'll call my friend, and he'll write the paper. He'll do the paperwork for you. And what is it you want to do? Kind of experimental. Okay, no problem.
I like your dad.
And he figured it out for me, and I went into his office one day and signed the papers, and it was done. Thank God he had a really smart friend who kind of wrote a very large mission that a few years down the road we refined. But, you know, that was like experimental theater and giving classes, and it's very broad and supple kind of chart that we could still use today.
Do you do that? Do you give classes?
Yes, I've started that. It's in 3 years now. In the spring, we give workshops. And it's really fun because I'm at a point now where I don't have to prepare to teach anymore. I'm ready. I feel ready, you know? And I didn't feel that way just 5 years ago. You know, the rare times I used to teach about 5 years ago, it was like such monumental preparation because I always worried that I wouldn't know what to say or have enough material. And now I'm discovering that I feel I'm ready to teach, and I feel that I know what I want to share with other people.
Now, there it's sort of, yeah, the teaching is... Or I'm thinking just in terms of getting up in front. I know that talking to people about stuff is just nerve-wracking until I'm actually doing it. That's why I have the poem here, because it's sitting down behind the board. Just my blood pressure goes through the roof. My pulse rate starts going, and then suddenly it calms me down, and everything then goes fine.
Exactly. And teaching is so very important.
Yes.
So very important. I remember how important my teachers were to me, and how disappointed I was when I had a bad teacher, and how jubilant I was when I had a good teacher. And so I take it very seriously.
So what is it that you do teach? What kind of method, approach, what is it that you translate?
Well, I teach now in the spring 2-week intensive workshop. It's in two slots, 1 week, 2 weeks, and on creative process, really. And it's open to all performers of the arts. So what I really like about our workshops is that I have people from everywhere. I have dancers, actors, I have people from the Cirque du Soleil, I have people from the cinema world, directors from film, I have writers, I have a poet who comes every year. I even had a magician once come and do the work. They all have to be professionals. They all have to have been on stage, and so it's about the creative process and how to tune into your own inner world. How to let go of censorship, let go of what's supposed to be, let go of what you think you're all about, and tap into what is your own inner landscape, and try and give you tools to try to bring that out. And through a rather physical approach, not intellectual. So it's very exciting work, and it's very exciting because you have a bunch of people, even though they're all established artists more of the time, they don't know who the other are. They don't know that this guy's a super filmmaker and that's a super writer, because, you know, people are in their world. So it's not like 20 dancers who all know who everybody is. And, you know, it's like, I don't know this director from Cirque du Soleil. I don't care. You know, and so it gives them a kind of a freedom and a naughtiness and a craziness to explore. And it's very exciting. And then I also team up with one of our regular dancers for a week or two. And the dancer gives a class. And then the other hour and a half, I and the dancer teach little excerpts of some of our shows.
Now, that creative process, I imagine that sort of ties into you sort of scooping up, which we referred to in the beginning, where it's you scoop up stuff and then sort of you become aware of it and slowly.
Yeah, exactly. And the workshop, you know, every year is a little bit different, because I always tell people from the start, this is what I'm going to teach you today. But tomorrow I might teach you something different. I might have changed my mind. I might be in disagreement with what I said yesterday. I don't know.
Now, they sound very, very nice. And they happen every spring?
Every spring now.
Okay. And yeah, how does one go about signing? Do you do radio people?
Yes, if you're a professional. Yes, I'm very curious. You know, the magician who came, and it was really interesting. He came because I asked people to send their CVs, not to see what they've done, just to make sure that they're not just, you know, 18-year-olds just out of high school or whatever, you know. And this young man came into my office and met with me, says, you know, I'm not a director, I'm not this. He says, I'm a magician. Can I do the workshop? I said, yeah, sure, you can. If you're a magician, I'd like to have you to come and do the workshop. So it's really interesting when you have people coming from completely different directions.
Very international.
Yeah, or interdisciplinary.
Yes. So do they, can you see a development? Did you, you know, did you see the magician's act and then was it way better afterwards? Do they bring in part of their background as well?
Some of them do, and it's hard to say because, you know, the workshop lasts 1 week and then some of them stay for 2 weeks, you know, and it's 5 times 3 hours or 10 times 3 hours. And usually the group is quite big, so I can't say that I walk away feeling that I know intimately what each one of them is about. No, I don't. But I definitely see, you know, after 5 or 10 days, a progression in their thinking process about the work that we try to do in the studio. Mm-hmm.
And I would also imagine that you'd learn as much from them as they learn from you.
I learn through them about what I'm trying to do. You know, when an exercise fails, you know, obviously I always consider it my fault in the sense that, oh, I haven't found the right way to explain this, or I haven't set them on the right path. Or so it, I learn through them about what I'm trying to do.
And how does one get in touch and to find out more details, sign up, and so on?
info@pigeonsinternational.com. Just send an email. Hello. I'm this brilliant broadcaster, radio broadcaster, and I'd really like to do this workshop.
That would be somebody else. I'm not brilliant by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah, now that Grâce à Dieu Encore is up and running, are you working on the next project?
Ooh, we're having meetings about the next project. We're having meetings with different people these days, with all kinds of different people, to decide what the next project will be. We know that Grâce à Dieu will carry on. We know that we will be doing it again, so there's that on the table. And hopefully I'm trying to find a way to link up in a more permanent way with my hometown, Lisbon, in Portugal. And they just did something really cool there. And there's a huge foundation there. It's called the Gulbenkian Foundation. It's a private foundation. But anyway, it's a very wealthy foundation that for many years has always helped the arts. And they sent out this massive email throughout the world saying, hey, all of you Portuguese people around the world, we need you. We need your help. We need your brains. We need your thoughts. We need you to be part of Portugal. Because there are more Portuguese people outside of Portugal than in Portugal. And they've set like this huge like call for proposals of ways to renew our link to Portugal. So I'd love Pigeons to have them. We've performed there many times, but I'd love Pigeons to have a permanent way of including Portuguese artists and being there on a regular basis. It would be a lovely thing to do. I'm hoping. So that's another mega thing that we're going to start working on this spring.
Yeah, Portugal's a very nice place.
Yes, it is. It's undeniable. It's absolutely, objectively true.
Now, I live in the middle of the Portuguese neighborhood in town and eat very well and have a wonderful, wonderful time. Although World Cup, it gets a little bit dicey.
Ah, well, no, it's lovely. You see the Portuguese win in a nice Portuguese cafe.
So will the next piece also be focused on the body? Is that kind of a running theme, or was it just Grâce à Dieu Encore, which was focused on the body?
I don't know. I mean, no, the next pieces are not focused on the human body, but I'm sure it will come back. This theme will come back. I think it's an infinite, timeless theme. I'm sure I'm not done with this theme.
It's something close to your heart, like one of your sort of core motifs.
Yes, I think I think I will need to come back to it again, for sure.
Anything else you can tell us about the new stuff?
New stuff? No, I feel too shy and not ready.
Okay. there with Grâce à Dieu. Because I was fascinated with it. It's had like a 3-week run at Cinquième Salle. Mm-hmm. Was that Was it built for or designed for such a small, intimate theater, and that's why you took the long time? Or once somebody's booking at Place des Arts saw it, said, oh my God, we need it for this long because it's so wonderful. How did that go about? Because normally I'm used to seeing shows that have a run that like a weekend or something.
I know. Our shows usually run 3 weeks. It's very standard for us. I think, happily, it's our theater heritage that makes that possible, because not only dance people see our shows, theater people see our shows. And we also have a huge audience in Cégep and university level, and we're like on the must list of many teachers of things to see, which is wonderful. Yes. And for that, what's cool, you know, I just met a few teachers this week. We're not just theater students. We're on the must list of communications courses, on the must list of cinema students. It's not just dance or theater students coming to see. It's actually, or multimedia. It's like these hybrid people studying, you know. And so there's a huge group just the other day is communications, you know. And so it makes us totally possible for us to run 3 weeks.
That's very cool.
Yeah, that's very, yes, very cool.
Yeah, I can totally see the cinematic aspect of your work, especially on that second stage that was set further in the back. And sometimes you would have a wall come up from the bottom and another one sort of screen from the top, and you just have this colored strip. And it looked nearly like a movie. Yeah. Like I felt like I was in a drive-in at that point. So I can see how it would sort of pull at the heartstrings of lots of different disciplines.
Yeah, well, anyway, we're thankful for all of them, you know, all of those people that come.
Yeah, there, that second stage. Have you seen the James Turrell piece at the Musée d'Art Contemporain?
No.
It's there. They have this exhibit now called Blue, where they had somebody go through their collection and take blue pieces, and they have this one thing by James Turrell, which initially was at Saint-Georges de l'Art Contemporain back in the late 80s. And it's a phenomenal piece where it is a room, and then a room within a room, and then because it has the black light, you see only the square, and it actually looks like a painting.
How wonderful.
And then you have to get up close, and suddenly you realize, oh, I can put my arm through it.
That's great.
Yes, and it reminded me exactly of that, and just the way that you had the lighting hidden behind and so on. And so the effect wasn't exactly the same, but it came pretty damn close.
Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. No, we're just about running out of time. Positive Vibes is in the house, and they will be coming up after us. Yeah, is there anything that we should have asked that we haven't asked?
No, just to celebrate the importance of art and save it. We have to save it because we are, you know, we have a government right now that is very dangerous for the world of the arts.
And other things as well. It's just a dangerous government.
Yeah.
Bettina, you have, what's on your agenda for the weekend? We have calendar. Oh, I see.
Why don't you start? I'm going to have I hope I put it in my iPhone because I'm seeing something tomorrow, but yes, I can't. No. A tangente, and I can't remember what it is.
Okay, now I'm going to see. Yes, this is which one? For people who are looking for stuff to do this weekend, there's a ton of stuff this weekend. Besides, Grâce à Dieu ton corps, which is at the Cinquième Salle tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday, I'm getting all giddy because I'm going to see the National Ballet of Cuba doing Giselle.
Whoa.
Yes, I definitely need a fix of classical ballet, and okay, they are going to do the thing. There is also, Le Duras show, which is happening next week at La Chapelle. It's on the 22nd to the 26th. And have you found out what you're seeing at Tangente yet? Or am I stressing you out there?
hang on. I'm on their website. And this week, what's it going to be? I'm on the 19th, right?
Yes.
Looks like Cost Not Less Than Everything. Suzanne Hood, Lutheo, yes. Kiefer, Sarah Bird, The Frying Pans Too Wide by Sandra Hood and Sarah Bird. That looks very cool. In collaboration with Montreal Highlights Festival.
Yes, everything these days is in collaboration with the Montreal Highlights Festival. Paula de Vasconcelos, thank you very, very much for coming in. It was a pleasure talking to you, pleasure meeting you. Bettina, thank you very much. You make me sound way better than I have any right to be. My name is Zeke. It's You've been listening to us on Movement Museum, CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on your cable dial, and movementmuseum.com on your computer and mobile device. We will speak to you next week.
So be sorry.